Just start off laughing. This is the best way to start off a vlog, right? Welcome, everybody, to the Czech blog. I'm here again with our good friend Jator Pierre. Hey, Jator, how are you? I got to work on my better question, but like I said, laughing is the best way to start these. So welcome.
Yeah, I really, really love playfulness. I think it's in the world that you and I kind of play in, experience, and move in. My experience is everyone's so serious, and so serious about these topics.
Yeah, right.
And my experience is they're really not that serious.
Yeah. Well, let's say there's a serious amount of energy put into them anyway. But so for those of you who are just joining us, we're kind of in the middle of a series on fat loss, which is a serious topic, at least in terms of, let's say, the energy, right?
Let's get serious about fat loss.
That's right. Let's get serious about fat loss. And if you missed our previous installation, I invite you to go back and to watch and to sort of meditate on what you hear there, because it's a fantastic video, not for any contribution on my part. Jator brings up some of the complexity behind fat loss and why we gain fat. In particular, you talk about our ancestry and something that I'd never heard about before. I think you called it the body fat set point.
Which
is really fascinating, especially when you put those two elements together and see how they interact to sort of lead people to gain weight in ways that they don't really want. So maybe could you do a quick recap on that for us? No, I can do it.
I'm in a mood today, James.
I can tell. I don't make me censor you again. I'll just put a big smiley face over you again and just talk on my own.
I went and worked out, and after my workout, I had this blueberry, banana, and protein shake. So I'm buzzing on pro-oxidants and good sugars and good protein. So I'm buzzing right now. Yeah, the quick recap.
Yeah.
Well, quick recap would be my invitation for everyone, if you want to get even deeper into what's behind that cap or in that cap, is a guy named Stephen Guyanet, G-U-Y-N-E-T. Mm-hmm. He's a neurobiologist. He's mainly where I garnered a lot of that information from. But outside of that, the recap is essentially looking at the energy demands of the body, how exquisitely important energy was to our survival as a species, and how our ability to navigate the environment was also dependent on our ability to survive, hunt, gather, and protect the energy that we had on board so that we can proliferate the species, hunt and gather, etc. So when you look at fat loss from the perspective of our ancestors, a lot of the ways that we're taught to lose body fat actually are in direct opposition with hardwired mechanisms our body to prevent that from happening. So Stephen Guyanet is a great resource. A kind of overall book that I think is also really good, well-written, and simple is Sean Cruxton's book, Dark Side of Fat Loss, which he wrote something around 6 or 7 years ago. What I really love and appreciate about Sean is he's really good at taking complex ideas and dwindling it down into easy to read, understandable concepts. And that book will also kind of give you the kind of six principle for Dr. View, that are other ideas that are forgotten around fat loss. So, you know, we talked about food reward and the seductive nature of food. We talked about palatability. And we talked about how all those things kind of play a role. Even this idea of calories. And you look at the research, which is really interesting, well-done research, and I want to be really clear about that. When you look at well-done research, still to this day, the only component that has been shown in research to have causative factors in weight gain is calories, is energy in. It hasn't been shown from a macro point of view. So that's really fascinating to me how we get really stuck on this macro ride. And I'm not saying macros aren't important, and I'm not saying there's more complexities here to be considered, and I'm not saying there isn't a wider context to put this all under. However, when we're looking at this from an ancestral perspective, it's our need to protect the system for survival. And starving yourself usually isn't the best way to gain long-term sustainability when it comes to fat loss.
Yeah, I really like this picture because it does. It reveals this complexity, right? We tend to treat people, at least in this country, if you're overweight, well, you're lazy, right? It's just a matter of willpower. And it's not. There are real mechanisms here, right? Our bodies, this ancestral perspective that you're telling us about, our bodies are wired, right, to think of food as a scarce resource and to eat it when you can and as much as you can because it might not be around, right? You couple that with this idea of in my head I keep thinking about it as the body fat thermostat, that set point, right? And it's easy to sort of keep moving that back and back when you're in a sea of food, right? The more you eat, the more sort of comfortable your body becomes with more body fat. So you put those two things together and you get this, you get real deep reasons for why people accumulate body fat.
Really deep reasons. And you also, you know, with that set point, what's also really interesting is that the control mechanisms in the brain around the set point and looking at leptin and the hypothalamus and pituitary communication between leptin and the brain. Is that when that system can become dysfunctional as well. And you can become leptin resistant. So what starts to happen is even the phone call from the body to the brain, letting the brain know where we are in terms of body fat percentage, doesn't get picked up anymore. And that comes from our lifestyle. That comes from inflammation. That comes from pro-inflammatory foods and processed foods. That comes from kind of our modern lifestyle and the our physiology and the inability for our physiology to navigate the modern lifestyle.
So if all of this sounds interesting to you, we'll put up a link here and go back and watch the first video because I think you're going to find it really, really fascinating. So today we're going to move on from ancestry and the brain. And we're going to talk about the mental, emotional side of fat loss. And you were telling me a little bit about your story to start off with before we get on to the video today. And I think that's a really great place to start to dive into this component to it. So would you want to share that story with our viewers?
Take it away, Jatour.
That's right.
The floor is yours.
That's right.
Yeah, I would like to share that story. At least a part of me would. It's a little vulnerable, so I think there's parts of me that I don't feel so comfortable sharing it. So we'll see where that goes.
Yeah.
So one of my stories around fat loss, and to give some background, when I was 9 years old, my parents were divorced. And at that moment, I started to gain body fat. And I have many reasons why that is, which we'll kind of swing back to. However, fast forward, I became obese. And at 15 years old, I started to dive into the ideas of exercise, nutrition, etc. Because I was playing ice hockey, and one of my goals or dreams is I wanted to go pro. And I knew that being obese was probably going to inhibit my ability to go pro. So I started to get into all of this stuff at 15 years old. So let's just fast forward to then 27, somewhere in that area. And I had kind of gone on this yo-yo with dieting and fat loss and up and down for years. There came a point, though, that I became exquisitely focused on getting down to the lowest body fat percentage that I could. And I was overworking out. I was playing hockey probably 5 days a week, somewhere around that. I was also lifting weights 5 to 6 days a week. I was also doing cardiovascular training 6 to 7 days a week. On top of that, I was also taking ephedra. I was also using methamphetamines. And I was under eating. So with all of that picture, I was also eating somewhere in the neighborhood of 1,800 calories a day, which is extreme under eating in conjunction with an extreme approach to killing myself to look a certain way. So through that process, I got extremely lean. And the story that I want to share is the day I was going to go get my body fat done hydrostatically, so underwater weighed, which is a pretty accurate form of getting what your body fat percentage is. I remember driving to the place, and I was thinking in my head, I was praying. I was praying and I was saying, please don't be anything under 10% body fat. And people say, well, why were you praying that? Well, I was praying because if I was under 10% body fat, I knew that there was something then going on mentally, emotionally, or the thought that I had at that time was I was crazy. Because if I was under 10% body fat at that moment driving there, and I still wasn't happy with what I saw in the mirror, I knew that there was something deeper going on. So I'm driving there. I get there. I do the hydrostatic weighing. I get out of the tub. The guy prints out my results. He gives them to me. I look at it, and it says, you're 3.5% body fat.
Wow.
Which is extremely low. And I thought at that moment that maybe I was going to get flushed with this overwhelming feeling of joy. I did it. But what's really interesting is I went to my car, and I called my dad, and I bawled my eyeballs out, like literally heaving with tears, could barely breathe, overwhelmed. And what I was feeling in that moment when I kind of feel back into it was I was down to 3.5% body fat. I had veins coming out of my abdominal area. But when I looked in the mirror, I still saw fat. I still wasn't happy. I still wasn't satisfied. And literally, right now I weigh around 195 pounds, somewhere in the neighborhood of 11 to 12% body fat. I got down to 164.5 pounds at that moment and was 3.5% body fat. My friend's nickname for me was Skeletor. And I still couldn't, I looked in the mirror and I still was not satisfied. So this body image distortion. And what I realized in that moment and the moments leading up to that was, one, I found it really interesting how I was willing to almost kill myself to look a certain way. Two, I thought when I looked a certain way that all of this other feelings that I was having, I'm not enough, I'm not smart enough, I'm not good enough, I don't do enough, any of my insecurities, I thought that would all disappear. And what I came to find out that that was all a facade. And I realized in that moment that what I actually see in the mirror has nothing to do with what's actually in the mirror. What I got to realize was that I literally distort everything in my life, including what I see in the mirror, based on what's going on inside of me mentally and emotionally and through all of my experiences of life to that moment. And that is kind of what started to drive my desire to dive into my mental and emotional aspects of self, or the shadow aspects of self, to start to evaluate and search and find and feel what was behind the story. Why was I willing to essentially almost kill myself to look a certain way, which actually didn't end up with the ideas that I thought it would, of all of these grand feelings of grandeur. Everyone's going to like me if I'm super lean. And what it does for me as a coach is that it really helps me to not just around fat loss, but it helps me to then ask and explore around any story that someone has. Wow, what's behind that story? So what's behind fat loss? What's behind muscle gain? What's behind speedier times on a race? What's behind being faster at hockey? What's behind wanting to create more? All of that, because I had this tangible, very hard, and also very beautiful experience of facing it directly in the mirror and nowhere really to run from it. It became very obvious at that point. So, you know, some of the ideas then that come up for me around fat loss, around mental and emotional perspectives, kind of to dive behind that, is there's this idea of familiarity. So when we're looking at our lives from a logical perspective, no matter what's showing up in our lives, and let's say that parts of our ego deem whatever's showing up as negative. I'm fat, negative, at least for some of us, negative perspective, and I want to change that. So as you're going through that change process, I've seen this happen with so many clients, it blows my mind. Including some of my family members, is that going through change or the change process is essentially you're asking somebody to lose familiarity with all their self-identification. So what does that mean, you know, simply? Well, that means simply that if I weighed 220 pounds and was 30% body fat, I've built a lot of self-identification around what that means to me, what that means when I look in the mirror, how I feel in my clothes. This whole, you know, all these facilitated pathways that help me know who I am in time and space. And as that starts to change, that can become extremely frightening for other parts of us. So I've had numerous clients go through this process and get to a point of not recognizing who they are in the mirror. And that is enough to elicit a self-sabotage response. Because from an ego's perspective, a metaphor that I really personally love is, if you imagine you're in the tallest building in your city, and you're standing there, and that top floor is completely empty, and there's glass windows all around you, and you can look around your entire city, and you know where all of your streets are, you know where all of your buildings are, you're very, very familiar with how to get around. You know that city inside out, like the back of your hand. Doing this work, whatever change work we're doing, whether it's fat loss or something else, doing this work is literally like being in that building and watching, being in your building, looking out at your city, and literally watching buildings be extracted, streets be blown up. You're literally watching the city disappear around you. So I want everyone to imagine for a second standing in this building, standing where you've been familiar, and then to look around at this city that you knew like the back of your hand, and nothing was recognizable anymore. Not one street, not one building, not one person, nothing. from an ego's perspective, that is scary as hell. Mm. It's completely unfamiliar. So parts of us will do everything we can to rebuild the city that we're used to, inclusive of rebuilding body fat that we're used to having. So that perspective really helps me guide myself and to help others guide themselves into, okay, so how do we help integrate this as we're extracting these buildings and changing these cities? How do we help you find the emotional connections that you had to those areas, building streets, etc., that facilitate these pathways? And we help you to slowly build new streets, slowly build new buildings, and slowly go through this process so that you then feel familiar and comfortable in the new place and time that you're at, rather than living in fear of, wait a second, everything has changed way too fast. So that's one perspective on fat loss and change in general, is that it doesn't make logical sense for most of us when we say, well, when we deem things as negative, but they're in our life. If you look at it from the perspective of familiarity, it makes complete sense, because the city is the same and it's where you feel comfortable and safe, even if it's detrimental to your health and wellness.
Let me ask a follow-up on that question, because that makes a lot of sense. I was listening to you tell your story and thinking about, you tell your story, and I've heard other people talk about, having these moments, these pivotal, almost epiphany, right? That is like flipping a switch and enables or empowers people to make changes in their lives that maybe they'd wanted to make before, but had kind of struggled with. And so I guess I'm asking, I want to ask, I'm not sure how I want to put this, but how important are those moments? Does everybody need to have one of these pivotal epiphanies in order to really make whatever change? In this case we're talking about fat loss, but to make these deep changes and to really sustain them.
That's a really interesting question. My experience is no. And my experience is no, is that it doesn't need to be these pivotal, grand experiences.
Yeah.
They can be really small. What may be important, at least from my perspective, whether it's small, grand, or anywhere in between, is one, bringing some level of awareness to what's being dealt with. Back to our self-sabotage video that we did a while back, how do I benefit from sabotaging my fat loss goals? That may not be some epiphany, and you might not get some grand, oh my God, this comes from my childhood when I was 2 years old, but you'll gain some sense of awareness about why you're doing what you're doing. And ultimately, I guess from my perspective, said, part of the change process requires awareness, confusion, and with confusion and awareness also requires the idea of owning consequences. So kind of from a functional self-parenting perspective, asking yourself, okay, I notice that I self-sabotage when I go on these fat loss journeys. What are the consequences of that? Positive consequences, negative consequences. And I'm using the word consequences just to give it a little bit more juice. But we could just say outcome too. What are the outcomes that I would deem positive? What are the outcomes that I would deem negative? Then we're clear on where that road lays and leads us to. We gain clarity on the road we've taken many times, and then we can ask a question about the road less traveled. The road less traveled then would be, okay, What are the positive and negative consequences of taking the road less traveled? Mm-hmm. And allowing ourselves to guess into that, because it's a road that's less traveled. We don't know, but we can guess into what might be the positive outcomes mm-hmm. of going down this different road and not self-sabotaging my fat loss goals. Mm. And wow, really interestingly, what will be the negative outcomes of going down this road less traveled? Mm-hmm. So I share a negative outcome, at least from a perspective. One of my clients went on this fat loss journey and must have lost somewhere in the neighborhood of 30 pounds of body fat. Mm-hmm. Got lean. She's a 55, 60-year-old woman. Mm-hmm. She's been in a relationship for the last 30 years. This was fascinating to me. Mm. She lost that weight, fat, got in shape, reached all of her perceptual goals, mm. was happy, enjoyed life in a different way. Mm-hmm. She had a different experience than I did. And fascinatingly, her husband no longer recognized who she was. Mm. Her husband no longer had the wife that he thought he had, and mm. she was no longer meeting his needs mm. in the way that he had always
yeah.
became essentially used to her meeting her meeting his needs. Mm. And fascinatingly, his reactive behavior to that process was to guilt and shame mm. my client about where she was. Mm. And her digestion, her needing to eat his perspective and projection, mm. she ate that up like a champ mm. and self-sabotaged herself to go right back to where she was so he could be comfortable, so she could be comfortable making him comfortable.
Mm. Wow.
So what might be the negative consequences of taking the road less traveled? Mm. Your life will completely change.
Yeah. Yeah. And the idea, that's fascinating. I can see the contrast between your story and hers, right? Because there, for you, it was an internal sort of matter. And for her, it was her husband's internals that were driving the return to the familiar.
Yeah. It was her husband's, you know, projections onto yeah. her, and then her internal ingestion of those projections, yeah. which then took her spinning down a road.
Right.
And her then question became, wait a second, you know, mm. mostly unconsciously, if I stay this path, I'm going to lose this relationship.
Yeah. Yeah.
And we see this happen all the time. There's I could probably make money if I made a nickel for every time someone takes a check course and goes home and breaks up. Mm. Mm. Because a lot of people come home changed.
Yeah.
Or having new ideas and questioning old ones.
Yeah.
And I'm like, wait a second, I want to do this differently. And their old way of relating in the world changes. Mm. Mm. Therefore, they come home, their partner has no idea who this person is. Mm. They're no longer who they thought they were. They're now coming home with new values, new perspective, new ideas, new right. ways of doing things.
Right.
Which can be inclusive of body fat loss. Maybe for her husband, maybe a part of him felt threatened mm. by looking better, being more attractive, gaining more attention from the outside world. Mm. Other men,
yeah.
and he was also then maybe a part of him was insecure about that. Mm. I mean, the dynamics we can go into forever.
Right. It's right.
It's just fascinating how familiarity drives us so hard. Even back to our last video, our stories, our ancestral deep-rooted DNA stories are so familiar. Mm. They're still hardwired in us.
Yeah, yeah. And is the importance of familiarity on an even deep level, is that about security?
My experience is about safety,
yeah.
Security,
yeah.
And probably another word, it's about control.
Right.
If I'm in control,
yeah,
or I own the illusion of control, I'm safe and secure.
Yeah.
Which, yeah. My understanding and my experience of my own ego aspects is they want to be in control of everything.
Mm.
It's like a never-ending control drama.
Yeah. Wow. So, in many ways, this goes back to our first, you know, what we started talking about way back in the first video is this idea of complexity. And the complexity of fat loss, because once you start to think about all the elements of familiarity that a person might have to wrestle with and give up, or maybe not give up, but be less beholden to,
mm-hmm.
That sounds really hard.
It is really hard.
Yeah.
This is why, you know, I don't know the direct numbers from a research perspective, but the numbers are not good. And when it comes to people changing,
yeah,
it's not, they're not that great, because it to change takes energy.
Yeah.
You know, and how many of us are low on energy? How many of us need stimulants to gain the energy we need to do just what we need to do in our daily lives? So we need energy, and then we need commitment to self and exploration. We need maybe the idea of the willingness to dive into the stories behind the story. I mean, this takes a lot of time and energy.
Mm.
And this is, again, for me, whether we're talking about fat loss or anything else, is for me a sign of a good coach is that they have coaches.
Mm.
I have coaches that I work with. I have three different coaches that I work with on different aspects of my life. Because those coaches who I respect help me find the blinders that I'm wearing so I can get past my blinders and get an outside perspective to help me through my own change process.
I
think it's part of it is like humbling yourself and knowing that it's okay to ask for help.
So we talk about, I'm thinking maybe that the kind of way to address these challenges, the challenge of the familiar, is some of the stuff that we talked about in previous videos, and something that you just mentioned before, right? It's being willing to care for self and to take the time to explore.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, take time to explore, looking at what your control dramas are.
Mm.
And allowing yourself to frame it in that way. A lot of people are going to be extremely defensive, in my experience, about control dramas. Oh, that's not a control drama. I don't have control dramas.
Mm.
That's a control drama saying you don't have control dramas. So kind of like softening up and back to this idea of playfulness, bringing in playfulness to these ideas. So.
Yeah.
Inviting in, like, wow, what are my control dramas? From a playful place, not from a critical self-judgment place.
Yeah.
So playfulness. What do I associate with foods? What is it? Why is it rewarding to me?
Mm.
A lot of clients I've noticed who have a sweet addiction. Whether it's, you know, we can go down the Czech way of, like, parasite fungus.
Mm-hmm.
Definitely could be parts of it.
Mm-hmm.
We can also look at it from another Czech perspective of, well, that's interesting. From a mental, emotional perspective, where in your life are you not receiving sweetness?
Mm-hmm.
Where are you not giving sweetness to yourself?
Mm-hmm.
And that then food becomes the place where you can garner sweetness and have a moment of sweetness, or a moment of reward, or a moment of bliss or pleasure, or whatever it is. Where are you missing that? And not just around sweet foods, but whatever foods are very rewarding to you, right? Like the rewarding idea.
Yeah.
Other things around fat, in my perspective, are, when did it start? Mm. Right? So for me, 9 years old. Okay, well, what was going on at 9 years old?
Mm.
Divorce, feeling out of control. My parents were getting divorced. Feeling like I wasn't good enough to keep them together.
Mm.
Wow. Where is a place that I could feel in control? Oh, food.
Mm.
I could control food. I could get pleasure from it. I can get joy from it. I could eat enough and more than enough to create this soft layer around me.
Mm.
What if I said at 9 years old, I was looking for softness in my life. So I overate to create this soft body in this world that I perceive to be very hard and unforgiving.
Mm. Mm.
So what is what's behind it? When did it start? What was going on in your life when it started is for me, a very powerful question.
Mm.
Fat can also be a way to protect yourself. Having too many eyes on you. Mm. Oh, well, if I get fat, less people will want to look at me. Mm. In the category of inappropriate touching, I don't want to be touched anymore because I was inappropriately touched as a child. So I'm going to make a body that isn't as attractive to most people to protect myself from being inappropriately touched.
Mm.
And what that brings up from my childhood. So another form of protection. And then from my perspective, a lot of us unknowingly have this extreme addiction to shame and fear.
Mm.
So part of that self-sabotage mechanism may be, well, I go on this fat loss program, and one of the reasons that I self-sabotage outside of the familiarity story, another one might be that I have an addiction to shame and I have an addiction to fear. So when I start to lose weight, I'll overeat or eat the wrong stuff so I can feel like S-H-I-T about myself.
Mm.
I can get back to my familiar place of feeling ashamed about my body, and I can feed my shame, my attachment to shame, by going on programs and failing at them so I can feel the shame that I've always felt, because I'm highly addicted to that, because I have no idea what it's like to run around in a city and not feel completely ashamed about myself, or afraid about what's going to happen.
Mm. Now, is that, this is one of the points that Paul brings up, and I it sounds really counterintuitive to say that you're addicted to feeling ashamed, right? Why would anybody be addicted to something that they recognize as bad, that they know is bad, right? It's so totally disempowering, right? And even intuitively, we know, well, feeling ashamed all the time must have health consequences, but yet we have this sort of addiction to it. So the question is, do people become addicted to feeling negative, what we would consider negative emotions, right? Because it's just a way of feeling something, right? Feeling something at least lets you know you're alive, as opposed to feeling, nothing at all. And of course, feeling pain or shame and these sorts of things is much easier, I think, for us than... It's easy to stumble onto it as opposed to, right? It's not as though we've really constructed a lives for ourselves, at least in America, that makes it easy for us to build lifestyles in which we're happy about all the different various dimensions of our lives. So the question is, do we become addicted to shame because it's a way of at least feeling alive? It's the easiest way of feeling alive.
I think from my perspective, to draft off of everything you shared, which I would agree with, and because we agree, it must be right. is that from the ego's perspective, first thing from one perspective is, this isn't logic. So when you try to understand emotion through logic, it's like trying to understand the left brain through the right brain. That it's two different languages. So they don't really make sense to each other.
Yeah.
So from a logical perspective, it makes absolutely no sense why I would have things in my life that are detrimental. From an emotional perspective, it makes complete sense why I would have things in my life that don't serve me. Because it's the way that I learned how to navigate life when I was a kid. It was the way that I learned how to get my emotional needs met then, and these are old behavior patterns that are still proliferated out through our adult lives, which don't make logical sense, and back from the childhood perspective, actually made logical sense then. As a kid, it was your survival programming. You had to learn how to survive in an environment. So you would do anything you could to survive, and you figured out how to survive and navigate that in any way you could to get your needs met. Attention, love, connection, attachment, etc. So a lot of these behaviors are just old, old rooted behaviors back to familiarity from our childhood. The other piece may be that from the ego's perspective, the ego parts of us are about essentially control. So from an ego's perspective, shame and fear is easier to control than the unpredictability of allowance and love. I can make you shame and fear me in a second, James. I don't know that I can make you love me.
Right. You can. yeah, that makes sense. I think that definitely makes sense. Wow. It's mind-boggling.
The beauty of that, back to this idea of confusion, we've talked about this in past videos, and I've even gotten emails from people saying, your videos are great, but I'm really confused. Which is awesome, because from my perspective, confusion is the one of the first steps to change.
Yeah.
So what might confusion mean from an ego's perspective? Confusion might mean that you had this old story that you were locked into. And during these videos, you're getting this new story that you're considering.
Yeah.
And confusion is the place in between these two stories. And your ego is confused.
And I was going to say, it goes back to what you're saying about the familiar too, right? It's a disruption of the familiar.
Totally. Disruption of the familiar. It's confusing because I don't know which one of these. I've had this old story for so long. This new story that I'm considering is scary. Parts of me are confused. It's unfamiliar. What if any of this is true? And, you know, we go back watching any of these videos, including myself, there's moments where we all disassociate. Lots of moments. One reason why we disassociate, in my perspective, is to protect us. So maybe someone's saying something that's so opening to a part of us and so closing to another part. The closing part will disassociate you, so you feel confusion or, oh, I need to rewind that because I don't know what the hell they just said.
Wow, so I'm starting to now put together the picture of the previous video with what we're talking about now, and you can start to see, right, so you've got this ancestral part of us that thinks of food as scarce and is constantly urging us to eat whenever we can and as much as we can. And then the sort of body fat thermostat that gets shoved sort of further and further towards accepting higher levels of body fat because we're in a sea of seductive food, right? And then you layer on top of that this desire for the familiar. And I can you can start to see now how the familiar would get indexed to that, you know, higher and higher level of body fat, whether it's because of internal, something internal to us, or whether it's because of something external to us, like your client's, you know, husband and his reaction. So you get these, this layering of causes.
The old causal chain routine.
Yeah.
That isn't linear.
And now, once you start to see that, right, you start to get why macros really, in some ways, don't matter, because it won't matter what macros you're worrying about if you have all these mechanisms that you're not addressing or thinking about.
Totally. And there's, to kind of just like, disregard everything in the last video and everything in this video, there's some really interesting research around looking at psychology and looking at people with quote unquote multiple personalities and how different personalities will have different blood markers. So one person may have diabetes, another personality may be metabolically healthy.
Yeah.
When you start to add that in,
that
really starts to show you, from my perspective, how powerful the heart and how powerful the mind are to creating your reality.
And one other thing that just occurred to me that fits into this whole mechanism that you've been describing is, so what happens when a person tries a diet and fails, and tries a diet and fails, or sees some success and then yo-yos back, some success and yo-yos back? And how does that fit with this sense, their sense of what is familiar for themselves? Does that sort of cement this idea that, oh, well, I'm just really meant to be at this weight that I'm really deeply unhappy with?
My experience is that it completely cements that from a kind of psychological perspective, an emotional perspective, for sure. From a physiological perspective, what it also does is it makes you extremely metabolically efficient. So what happens is the more you play these games, the more diets you go on, the more overworking out you do, the more efficient your body has to become functioning on less calories.
Yeah.
So essentially these people end up being Toyota Priuses, right? Mm-hmm. A lot of miles to the gallon, which sets them up to get to places where they're eating 500 calories and still can't lose weight.
Yeah.
So the more efficient a person becomes, the harder it is to lose body fat because of these protective mechanisms. And when we're losing body fat, we want to be more like a Cadillac. We want to get 9 miles to the gallon. And there's hormonal pathways that are created to create efficiency in the system, back to this idea of energy conservation, to move less, eat more, rest more, all this happening unconsciously. To become more conservative, even if you're working out. Remember we said back on, if I work out 2 times in a day, I notice this desire for me to be extremely conservative.
Yeah.
So if you're working with yourself or with clients that have dieted extremely in the past, like myself, one of the worst things you could do with a client like me is to put me on a diet. One of the worst things you can do with a client like me is put me on intermittent fasting. One of the worst things you can do with a client like me is have me overwork, because my body will smell fasting, starvation, overworking out from a mile away, and it will elicit those old pathways to protect the system, to make sure I can survive long term. Like someone like me who's done all played all these games, I have to really honor feeding myself, resting, giving myself the nutrients, giving myself the calories I need, honoring all that exquisitely to help create safety and security at the cellular level. And that's another piece that people forget, is that if you're an accumulation of all of these bacteria and cells and you've stressed all of them out over and over and over and over and over again, they are in a fear state. So a person like that, to lose body fat, they have to be invited into this happy, safe place to elicit that response. Otherwise, they're just going to be in fear. And what's fear? I'm going to protect myself.
So, wow. I'm starting to get sort of overwhelmed by the complexity here.
I'm always overwhelmed, James.
More of those blueberry banana shakes and the overwhelm will go away.
I thought it'd be a good, you know, good food for a conversation.
Yeah. My brain will be spinning for a while. So if there's something, if our viewers are really embracing this and embracing this complexity, and now we're sort of added on this mental and emotional stuff, is there some one starting place that you can offer to somebody who's now recognized this complexity in their in their own life? You know, what should that person do apart from just lying down and weeping about this complexity?
My first invitation is to consider hiring a coach. Someone who's well-versed in mental, emotional, nutritional, movement. That'd be first invitation. I'm one of those people. second invitation would be to just peel these things back one at a time.
Yeah.
Simply ask yourself, when you're self-sabotaging, where does that come from? How do I benefit from that? Start to journal. You can journal. Paul likes to do artwork. You can do artwork. I have clients that are dancers. I'd invite them to do a dance routine that elicits that response so they can feel it in their body. Close your eyes and feel where this comes up. Where do you? Is it in your shoulders? Is it in your back? Is it in your stomach? Why? What chakra is that associated with? Move in zone exercises to explore yourself. Create some space in your life to simply, to use Czech language, to meditate on and allow self-exploration, not from a criticism, a shaming and fear place, but to bring playfulness into this as imaginative, curious. Wow. That's why I might self-sabotage. That's so interesting. Whoa. And a part of me learned that to survive when I was a kid. Oh, man. Thank you, little kid, for learning that. So we're here now together so we can have this conversation. Like bringing in a lot of kindness with yourself around any of this stuff. And as you know, I get all my tattoos for myself. My next tattoo... I was having a conversation with a friend a few years back, and I was in a self-critical place, which is okay. And she sent me a text that said, "Would you be willing to be kind to my friend?" That's my next tattoo. Would you be willing to be kind to my friend, me? So bring kindness in to yourself.
Yeah. That's great. Yeah, that was going to be my last question. I mean, this is a question for another video in some ways, is the approaches that people take, coaches take, to helping their clients do the shame process. And as we all know, shame is certainly one of those tools that coaches use.
Yep, that's the opposite of my opinion. Yes. They do use it out there.
Yeah. Good. Well, this is just like the last video. This is another one, like I said, where my brain will be spinning for a while. But I'm really appreciating the attention to the complexity that's behind fat loss, and I think our viewers are going to do that too.
Awesome. I'm happy to share my heart and my mind.
Great. And so, what is our next topic going to be for this fat loss? What are we going to talk about next?
I think we're going to go with sleep and the microbiome.
Awesome. That sounds exciting.
Yeah.
More complexity.
More complexity. And easy things to do. Six principles, four doctors.
Complexity, simplicity. Yeah. I love it.
The
Thanks.
Most simple addresses the most complex.
It's very zen. Thanks so much, Chitor.
All right, brother. Thank
Take
you.
Care.